Summer brings with it lots of wonderful outdoor music, theater, and art up and down New York State, but one festival seems to want to have it all. Now in its 13th year, Bard Summerscape has a host of programming, which includes the 26-year-old Bard Music Festival and features any form of art you might want to experience. It puts a special focus on talks and lectures, and as the New Yorker notes, it appeals to anyone who wants to think about the music, not merely bathe in it. Joining us now is Maestro Leon Botstein, Bard Summerscape's co-artistic director, the music director and principal conductor of the American Symphony Orchestra, among others, and the president of Bard College. Maestro, welcome back to our show.
Oh, thanks for having me.
You were the youngest college president in history when you were at Franconia College before you were named president at Bard in 1975. Were you already conducting orchestras?
Oh, yeah. No, I started out wanting to be a musician, training to be a musician, so as a conductor. So I conducted when I was undergraduate. I had a chamber orchestra at Chicago, and then was assistant conductor of the university orchestra there. Then when in graduate school, I was the assistant conductor of the Harvard Radcliffe Orchestra. And then when I was a graduate student, and then I did the doctor's orchestra in Boston. And so that was my ambition, is to mix scholarship with conducting.
But it is odd that you became a college president. In fact, you may have been the youngest ever, and I wonder whether you're the only musician who runs a liberal arts school, not a music
conservatory
school.
Yeah, probably, yeah. I mean, partly because Bard has a very strong history in the arts. It would not have been possible had Bard been a conventional liberal arts college, therefore, without a strong investment in the arts.
Hasn't this year's festival already started?
We've just opened. We did a dance performance in Oklahoma in a revised version directed by Daniel Fish, has just opened, yeah.
And that's being called something like an intimate version?
I don't know. It's called Oklahoma, but and I'm glad we got the cooperation of Ted Chapin and the organization that controls Rodgers and Hammerstein. It's a professional version of a production that Daniel Fish did with the undergraduates in 2007. Very successful.
In the round.
Very wonderfully imaginative.
Oklahoma is a very North American musical tradition. Do you hope that it makes people think about American national identity in the way that some of the other music you're presenting does?
Yeah, it's we chose it because it does have a strange, unusual connection to Chavez, the subject of our music festival this year, which is Mexico and Latin America.
Carlos Chavez,
the Mexican composer. And partly because Oklahoma does talk about the outsider, and it takes place in a part of the country that was actually once part of Mexico, but before we took it in the mid-19th century through war. But so it's a dark and very penetrating look at you know, outsider and insiders, and Latin American concert music has always been on the periphery. You know, Copeland was a real defender of it, and Bernstein was. But in truth, the music we're going to do this summer, most of it, and most of the composers, are either barely known or not known at all. People know who Canastera was, maybe they know, maybe who Chavez, Villa-Lobos, Revueltas, maybe.
Villa-Lobos, probably the most famous.
Probably Villa-Lobos, yes, but maybe one piece. So this is an opening of a very rich symphonic and chamber music and classical music tradition in Latin America that's 150 years old at least.
Chavez seems to have had many prominent friends and admirers like Copeland, Martha Graham. But didn't he try to synthesize European classical technique with the disappearing indigenous Mexican musical traditions? Was that his goal?
It was an odd thing. He was hired, discovered really, by José Vasconcelos, who was the very inspired and unusual minister of culture after the end of the Mexican Revolution in 1920. And this is the same guy that hired Diego Rivera and Orozco and Siqueiros to do the murals. And the idea was to making a new national Mexican public art. The trouble is that in music, all that the composers had were visual artifacts. They could see what kind of flutes and drums, but nobody really had any idea what it sounded like.
Because the conquistadors pretty much wiped all of that culture out.
Oh, yes, and no one recorded it. No one recorded any kind of notational aspect of what kind of Aztec or pre-Aztec music there was, pre-Columbian of any kind. So what Chavez did was to do two things. One is to invent what he called imaginary Aztec music, which is fascinating because it was a kind of way to inject modernism into an idea of what that music must have sounded like. The second thing, so he used Aztec instruments, indigenous instruments, but not the sounds are really imagined. The other thing is that he, unlike some, the Mexican revolutionaries believed that the Spanish heritage, the heritage of the Spanish conquest, had become theirs. So the Mexican song, the dances that came to them through Cuba, some directly from Spain, that sort of 18th century, 19th century tradition, Ponce, for example, one generation earlier than Chavez, they really made a folkloric music that was Mexican out of that.
Since Mexico is so regional, there's northern Mexican music different from mariachi, different from the music of the Caribbean, which almost echoes salsa. And then, but interestingly, here's this Carlos Chavez, who was considered an important composer for a while, and now has slipped into obscurity. Why?
It's a good question. Why do people slip into obscurity? You know, the average person will tell you that history is a kind of objective judge, like blind justice. That's baloney.
We know that from Vermeer disappearing or Caravaggio for centuries and then suddenly now considered both of them very great artists.
Yeah, I mean, I consider it more brutally, you know, and one thinks about who survived and who didn't survive, let's say, a war or a battlefield, or let alone something like incarceration during the Holocaust. It was luck. Were you there at the right place at the right time? It wasn't merit. So in the case of Chavez, first of all, you're absolutely right. They tried, Chavez, a generation of Revueltas too, they tried to create a new national identity out of this very disparate regional place. So the modern Mexican nationalism was part of the objective. The reason he's fallen out of the repertory is largely because generally the audiences in Europe and North America have always looked down on Latin America as a place of classical music. And so it's a reductive idea that Latin America is okay for salsa, for tango, for a mariachi band, but it's the same way that the view of Mexico through Hollywood is an extremely reductive one.
I'm talking with Leon Botstein about the Bard Summerscape Festival, this summer's 2015 festival. Of course, when you decide to do something about arts in Mexico, you could have had no idea that Donald Trump would make this into a political hot potato. Another event in the Summerscape Festival linked to Mexican history and identity is Reinventing Mexico, a film series. What's included in that?
Well, they're basically films that come some out of the powerful period of the 1930s. Mexico became a destination point for American radicals beginning in the 30s.
But also great European filmmaker. Luis Buñuel made a number of films.
Exactly right.
And one of the greatest cinematographers who was a guest on our show once, Gabriel Figueroa. Hollywood just adored him.
Totally. And Mexico was an important source of creative energy in the film. Paul Strand made the very famous film with Revueltas' music called Redes, about a fishing village, and its revolt against its owners, against the capitalists. And so, and also looking at the way Mexico is represented in commercial film. The visual arts, of course, are an enormous part of the heritage that Chavez dealt with. So he worked very closely with Tamayo, his HP ballet. The sets were done by Diego Rivera. So there's a real connection between the muralists, the painters, and the composers.
And talking about dance, won't Pam Tanowitz be presenting new choreography based on Chavez's music?
Yeah, she has choreographed the Violin Sonatina, which is a wonderful piece. And so there is, and of course he wrote Dark Meadow for Martha Graham. So there is a connection through Copland and that generation of working with Martha Graham in the modern dance.
Will you be conducting any of this music?
I'll be doing, during the festival, I'll be doing the orchestral concerts, which include music by Chavez, Villa-Lobos, Carrillo, a generation older than Chavez, a guy who became very famous for a kind of microtonal music, but he wrote wonderful romantic symphony, which we're doing. And Nepomuceno, also a parallel older figure in Brazilian music, and Ginastera. So, yes, I'll be doing, I think, three concerts.
And another Latin American artist to be featured will be Fernando Rubio of Argentina, an outdoor performance piece called Everything by My Side. But one of the most fascinating things is not Latin American. You've chosen to feature this year an opera by Dame Edith Smyth called The Wreckers from 1902. She was supposedly had a brief affair with Virginia Woolf.
Yes, yes. She was a remarkable character. Actually, if you go to the Sargent show at the Met, you will see the charcoal drawing made of her in 1901 by John Sargent. So Dame Ethel Smyth was the most important British woman composer and a very important figure in British music.
And she was considered important in her time?
Oh, yes. She died in 1944. She was knighted. She also wrote. She wrote memoirs. She was a very prolific person. She also got herself arrested because she was a campaign for the right of women to vote. She was a lesbian and a sports person. Also, she was an equestrian. She studied composition in Germany, and the opera we're doing is her masterpiece, very much admired by Bruno Walter and Sir Thomas Beecham.
What's it about?
It's a fabulous story. The one reason we chose it is because it's so germane. It was premiered in Leipzig in German. So it's about a Cornwall. It's about a fishing village. Not a fishing village, excuse me. It's a village on the cliffs of Cornwall that it's a very pious Wesleyan community. It's a religious community that's fanatical. The opening lines of the opera are that God washes the sins of this chosen people white. So because of their belief that they are the true instruments of God, they make their living by plundering and killing. They extinguish the beacons on the coast and lure the ships in to be wrecked. Mm. Then they kill the survivors and steal the cargo. And they do this in the name of God. What more germane subject can hardly imagine? And it turns out that two people in the younger generation, who are a love couple, come to the conclusion that this is something wrong with this. And so they turn the lights on, and they prevent the shipwrecks from happening, and the community begins to starve, so they investigate what's going wrong. They first think it's an act of God to punish them for not being good enough Christians, but it turns out that they're traitors. They find the traitors, they condemn them to death, and they're drowned to death.
Mm. Well, she was much admired by, as you said, some great contemporaries, I gather, also Debussy and Tchaikovsky and others. And yet, isn't this the premiere of this work in the
United
States?
Yes, it is.
What happened? She never got past Britain?
She never got past being a woman.
Or Germany?
She never got past being a woman. So what's hard to overestimate, actually, the prejudice against women composers in her generation. And particularly, she was, by being a lesbian and by also being extremely forceful, she was derided for writing music that was too manly. Mm. She wrote Wagnerian, big-scaled, operatic, dramatic, symphonic music in this opera. And so she suffered from both prejudice, contempt from her fellow English composers.
Do you think it's worse in music than other areas? After all, Virginia Woolf was a celebrity in her lifetime, continues to be one of the best read writers. There were artists, women who still are remembered. But for some reason, is music different?
Somehow composition ranks with philosophy as being inhospitable to women historically. So you're absolutely right. There is a longer tradition of women writers dating back to the 18th century.
Well, we had that woman named Jane Austen.
That's exactly right. Starting with that. But composition has been a much harder and a steeper climb.
Well, we're going to go out with something from The Wreckers by Ethel Smyth. There are all sorts of other interesting things in the festival. I didn't mention the return of Spiegel Tent and Justin Vivian Bond. And we have a full schedule and ticket information for the Bard Summer Scape on our show page at WNYC.org. My great thanks to Leon Botstein. I don't know whether to call you president or maestro.
Just call me Leon.
Thank you so much for being on our show again.
My pleasure.